Joining us now to analyze today's headlines is Chenjerai Kumanyika, sitting in for Rahul Mahajan. He's an assistant professor of communication studies at Clemson University. Hi, Chenjerai.
Hi, how are you doing?
Doing well, thanks for joining us. More than 100 people died in a chemical explosion at a factory in the Chinese city of Tianjin over the weekend. Among the dead were factory workers as well as firefighters sent in to douse the flames. Chinese Prime Minister Li Keqiang toured the area and promised a transparent investigation. Members of the Chinese press and the public are demanding answers over why the explosion happened. There are still high enough levels of chemical toxins in the air that people have begun wearing face masks. Meanwhile, here in the U.S., a metaphorical explosion of sorts took place over the weekend when an investigative piece on the nation's largest online retailer, Amazon.com, raised serious questions. The New York Times' Jody Cantor and David Stretfield asked hard questions about the company's, quote, ability to extract the most from employees. Amazon's founder and chief executive Jeff Bezos is in full damage control mode, promising not to tolerate the, quote, shockingly callous management practices described in the article. Chenjerai, aren't the Chinese factory explosion and Amazon's workplace problems part of the same devastating architecture of global capitalism?
I think so. And I think that architecture really renders the lives of workers disposable. I mean, we know that the explosion in Tianjin happened at a warehouse that is part of this architecture where, things have to be produced at cheap prices, and safety concerns are let go as a result. But what we also see is, as part of that architecture, is the PR, the public relations industry's effort to sort of cover up what's actually going on. I mean, Amazon, although there's a recent article about Amazon, we know that Amazon has a history of extremely egregious working conditions. I'm reminded of a former student of mine in Pennsylvania who went on to work for Amazon and later told me about some of the conditions there for the lower level laborers. So now this article is revealing conditions all throughout the company, and there's an effort to avoid transparency on this issue.
Another piece of investigative journalism has also made news. The New York Times, in collaboration with ProPublica, published on Saturday an article that found that the National Security Agency's, quote, ability to capture internet traffic on United States soil has been based on an extraordinary decades-long partnership with a single company, AT&T. A newly released trove of internal documents from AT&T over the decade 2003 to 2013 found that the telecommunications company had a, quote, extreme willingness to help the U.S. government spy on its citizens. The documents were provided by whistleblower and former NSA contractor Edward Snowden. The team of journalists that analyzed them included Laura Poitras and James Risen, both of whom have been targets of surveillance and or government prosecution themselves. Well, Chenjerai, do you think such an investigative pieces will actually drive constructive change? Will AT&T face any consequences?
Well, it's hard to say. I mean, I know in 2008, laws were passed dealing with the Bush's attempt to engage in the same, to work with telecoms in terms of spying on the public. And those laws that were passed protected AT&T. But, in October 2013, United States told the United Nations that it would not monitor its communications. And what we're learning from these Fairview documents is that the NSA did precisely that with AT&T as a very willing partner. And another thing I think that is particularly worrisome is that it's not just simply information about AT&T's customers, but also other companies that were involved in those communications that are coming in, that are included in this kind of surveillance. So I think that, it's really a problem that we have to continue to focus on.
And finally, a civil rights icon passed away over the weekend. Julian Bond, who headed the NAACP for many years, died on Saturday night in Florida at the age of 75 from complications related to vascular disease. Bond was a central figure in the civil rights movement, having also led the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, or SNCC. He co-founded the Southern Poverty Law Center, and he made history with his election to the Georgia House of Representatives in 1965. He was a prolific activist and author. President Barack Obama on Sunday, who was among many who mourned Bond's passing, said, quote, justice and equality was the mission that spanned his life, and that he was, quote, a hero, and I'm privileged to say, a friend. Well, Chenjerai, how important is Julian Bond's legacy?
I think his legacy is important on a number of levels. If we look at the areas that he brought his activism to, we see different areas that, one can use as sites for social justice, including not just lawmaking, radical protests, but also poetry and cultural activism. And, you know, in some ways, in this era where we have activists who specialize in social media or specialize in one particular area, his life is kind of a different model. But I think he really shows you how it is possible to have a full life dedicated to civil rights, to human rights, that can touch all of these different areas. And it's really important.
Chenjerai, thank you so much, as always, for joining us. And we'll talk to you again next time.
Thank you.
Chenjerai Kumanyika, sitting in for Rahul Mahajan today, is an assistant professor of communication studies at Clemson University. He's our daily newsflash guest expert. This is Uprising. And by the way, you can catch Uprising on Free Speech TV weekdays at 3 p.m. Pacific and 6 p.m. Eastern. We also have our own YouTube channel at youtube.com/Uprising with Sonali. And if you subscribe to that channel, your paid subscription sustains the TV production of the show. We'll be right back after this break.